Hey there, Jerry.
Hello, Jeremy.
How you doing?
I am excited. I'm excited. A little nervous too.
Oh,
you know,
you have no reason to be nervous.
I'm being pitched.
Oh.
Wait, that makes it sound like you're throwing me somewhere. Never mind.
You know, I've been talking a lot the last few weeks about music. We both have, actually.
Uh-huh.
And a thought occurred to me. Really, Jerry, if you had a theme song, what would it be?
Oh my goodness.
Now, I will confess to you, I haven't thought myself of this. So this is both off the cuff. And real quick, though, we are joined by a couple of very special guests. We have no idea who they are. They just wandered into the studio. A young man that looks like his name might be Andrew, and another young man. What would be his name, Jerry, if you gave him one?
Doofus? No, that's not right.
Phil.
Phil. No.
No.
Okay. No.
Okay.
Sebastian?
No. That, no. Most of that name's taken already.
Yeah, that's true. How about Lucas?
Lucas, he is your father.
That's right.
Spoiler alert. So,
no!
Anyhow, I'm going to ask the same question.
As you might have guessed if you listened to last week's episode, we are once again joined by our firstborn sons.
For this episode, we are four guys in a franchise.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm gonna ask you guys the same question though. If you had a theme song, a song that you would want to play when you walked in the door, what would it be?
You know, I have, funnily enough, had this thought before.
Oh, do tell.
So throughout middle school I had many classes which I was very bored. So I had many different thoughts. This one was one of them at the time. Because me and my friends were discussing superpowers and whatnot, and that led to intros. And we all kind of came to the conclusion we'd have no clue. We wouldn't want it to be something silly because, like, eventually you yourself would probably get sick of it.
Right.
But you wouldn't want it to be, like, something, like, super intense. Like, if you're walking into a bathroom and, like, boss music plays...
Dark Souls music starts playing.
I think the trauma from that.
Bum, 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 bum,
the trauma from that would be.
So we'd honestly have no clue. I wouldn't be able to pick like just one. I'd have to go for like, I don't know, like say there's a test that day, like it'll be like dark and gloomy music versus like, I don't know, it's like going out to recess, it's like, yeah! I don't know. I couldn't decide.
Your report card day would be Sarah McLachlan in the Arms of the Angels.
I'm laughing.
Andrew, have you thought about it at all?
Pretty much going off of what Lucas said, it depends on what you're doing. Like, for a test, it'd probably be like something very sad and gloomy. But if it was just, like, going over to someone's house, probably more of a joyous song and has a bit of a different tone than everything else.
Very cool. Jerry,
well,
you see,
know,
they're contemplating.
Well, you know, what's funny is, you know, you asked what would be our theme song, one thing, and then both the boys answered with basically what I said on our previous podcast discussion about this. Because you asked me about music, and I said, oh yeah, I use music to be the soundtrack
right.
of my life.
Of course,
in
yes.
which I play certain kinds of music under certain circumstances, certain kinds of music in other circumstances.
But
it's almost like we're
running. Right.
Two guys in a franchise plug, go back a few episodes. Anyway, and I was thinking, like, if I had a theme song, I'd want it to be aspirational.
Okay.
I'd want it to be, like, you know, something that even if I wasn't in that mood or frame of mind or setting, if I wasn't, I wished I were, right? Something aspirational. So I was thinking about, also, it'd have to be classic, and it'd have to be emotional, and it'd have to have different tones, and it'd have to have emotional connections to both that which is adventurous and wonderful and amazing, as well as that which is kind of silly and funny. And so this is what I came up with. Let's see if it works.
Oh. Beautiful.
I think if that played every time I walked in the room, I'd be pretty pleased with that. I'd be okay with it.
I'd get you a whip.
For a second in the beginning, I thought it was the Monsters, Inc. Like, walking in, you know?
You know, I was thinking, and this is my whimsical side here. There's a particular song that is rather whimsical. Some would argue downright silly. It would have to be They Might Be Giants, Birdhouse. And it is... Andrew's like, I don't want to know him anymore.
I don't know it.
Well, here you go. It's one of those songs.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I like it.
It is funny. It is silly. It's whimsical. But at the same time, it's what I want to be, you know? I want to be that one that watches over people.
I want to be a birdhouse in my soul.
Yeah. It goes on to say, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. There's some serious points to a funny song. That and They Might Be Giants is... a 90s classic staple. So, just saying.
All right. Now, we gave the boys an opportunity to push the button last week, and it didn't go so well.
No.
I have to say. So, should we give them another chance?
I think. Can you guys like time it that you both push the button at the same time?
Like a missile countdown almost?
with the keys, yeah. Turn the keys at the same time. Yeah, you think you can do it?
Worth a shot.
All right. Here we go. Shall we do a countdown?
Yeah. Alrighty.
You know which button to push, right? And what it sounds like, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
Okay, all right. Three, two... One.
Nothing happened.
There was no.
Oh my God.
The button's broken.
Is it
broken? It ain't working.
All right, I'll hit it. Fine.
All right.
Boop.
Welcome to Four Guys in a Franchise. We're trying something new this week. Even newer than what we tried last week, where we brought our boys on. I'm not sure that went as planned. It was better than expected. Yay! Go back and listen to it if you've not listened to it already. But we're trying something new. Jerry, my wonderful good friend here.
No.
It's not an anime fan, okay? He's not really been pushed to watch anime, either by himself or by others. A few months ago...
This thing of which you speak, this anime?
No!
I challenged Jerry to watch Anime. And so I pitched to him the idea of these three things. I think you would get a good idea of some of the variation that's out there in this massive juggernaut of media. So I picked for him Demon Slayer, I picked Erased, and I went with a fun Miyazaki film, Spirited Away, which was an instant classic. And I said, Jerry, you need to watch these three things if you want to get a halfway decent idea of the wide variety of things that are out there.
I believe what he actually said was, if you want me to keep being co-host of the show, you will watch these things.
It was not an ultimatum with that tone. It wasn't ultimate.
Okay.
So Jerry set about to watch the first season of Demon Slayer, the first arc. And he also watched an amazing series called Erased, as well as the Miyazaki film. The three of us that is not Jerry all have very, very strong, long histories with anime. I can imagine the hate mail coming from this.
No, but, on the comments. Please, do not yell at us for this in the comments.
It's anime.
Okay.
I just made so, Lucas sound like a character from an anime. So we're going to begin this episode, as we often do when we launch into a whole new kind of franchise or genre. We're going to begin with origin stories. Yes. I'll go first. I have none. Next.
No.
So
this is my origin story. I just realized. Ooh. You guys are listening to it live
as
on
it's
the
happening.
Podcast.
Lucas, what? Where did you get the whole let's see where this anime thing is and where it goes?
So, first let me state, I'm not affiliated with my father and the way that he says the names. Luckily, he has started to start saying anime. It is quite nice, but for the longest time, I heard, hey, Jeremy's trying to get me into anime, and I'm like,
Well, anyway. You know, it's a certain style of animation.
All right, Jerry. No. Seriously, the last thing we need is to be swatted here, okay?
Well, I'm gonna get so many like. Not shade it that way. You shade it this way. Watch, it's gonna be a very
it's
top GIF. Comment on
it
this.
Is, I do
very
find
top.
It.
GIF.
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 All right, that's
actually best GIF. 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 I thought it was like second half, but GIF or GIF.
I have no history with this genre, so how did you get into it?
I got into it. Let's see, when did I first get into it? I think it might have been like fifth or sixth grade, to be honest. A bit late to get into it, but I had enjoyed things like Power Rangers, and I liked some animated series and cartoons. I think one of the earliest animated series that I did enjoy. There was Johnny Test. There was...
reboot from when we were... Johnny Test was originally a 1960s
really?
Cartoon mm-hmm. show. Yes, it was.
Yes,
dang.
It was.
That's hilarious.
One of the other ones was Danny Phantom. Danny Phantom.
Oh, that's an excellent show.
I'm a big fan of Danny Phantom. I actually rewatched it like a year ago, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's Cartoon Network, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's classic Cartoon Network. Right
but I knew I enjoyed animated series, so when I saw that anime was its own thing, in like fifth or sixth grade, I was like, I'll give it a shot, and so I tried out a couple of them, and I was like, "This is good."
Do you remember what the first one you watched was?
I think it was SAO, Sword Art Online.
SAO,
Sword Art Online.
Mm-hmm. I think that was the first online.
Mm-hmm. I think that was the first solo.
I think that was the first anime I watched. If not that, then I tried watching like Naruto, and then just gave up, and then watched SAO. I came back to Naruto, and now I've seen it twice over, and then all the movies three times over. And what I normally do is if I really enjoy an anime, I'll do it once in sub, once in dub.
Okay.
And for some that I really enjoy, I'll go back to the...
We're not going to get into that this time.
Well, we've already opened up the can shell of anime, so...
You're saying it.
And we had finished with it. Thanks, Lucas.
See what you've done to me?
It's never going to die at this point.
So why do you love it? What is your relationship with it? What about it appeals to you so much that as a teenager you would spend your own hard-earned money to have a Crunchyroll subscription?
Much like you, which in the podcast you have talked back to when you were in school, and there was a TV in one of the school rooms before Nana would pick you up. Nana for me, by the way, is his mom.
That's how I got into Star Trek. Yeah,
precisely. Anime is kind of the same thing for me, in which after school or just like at bits and times, I'd watch it and I enjoyed it. It'd be like a little mini comfort in life, right? If that makes sense. So it was kind of something similar like that, which like after school or sometime in the afternoon, I'd watch an episode or two, really enjoy it, you know, then kind of just developed from there. And now I'm still watching it to this day. I'm currently watching Cyborg 009.
Currently wearing a t-shirt featuring...
Naruto, yeah. Specifically Kakashi-sensei, as well as some of the other sensei, and Hokage, and Itachi.
Are you going to be Hokage someday?
Believe it!
Andrew, I know where it came from.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it started with, like, my parents, also Mr. Jeremy over here, was like, hey, let's try watching Dragon Ball Z. I'm like, sounds interesting. I liked it. We about got halfway through Z, and then I started just going off my own, watching a few anime, and then eventually, I think the earliest one I remember is Seven Deadly Sins, which Lucas actually was the one that introduced me to it. I love it to this day. It was probably one of my most favorite first animes.
Yeah, Seven Deadly Sins is definitely one of the ones that I do hold close to my heart, because that one was one of the first ones that I did see. Really took a liking to.
I actually owned, like, the first 9 manga for it.
Yeah, and I was so excited when the new seasons were coming, and then it became Seven Deadly Frames. And I was a bit disappointed, because, for reference, the animation studios changed or something along those lines, and
After the second to final fight, it just dropped.
Don't get me wrong. It's still amazing.
It was good. It's
But the well, first couple seasons, you could tell. Still enjoyed it, though. And they're still doing some movies and side series and whatnot, too.
Non-canon stuff.
So, I have an actual funny little anecdote here. Andrew has been watching anime far longer than that. But when he was maybe 13 months old, 14 months old, you know, at that age where they're pulling themselves up, trying to walk and everything. My wife and I were watching one of my favorite series, Full Metal Panic, okay? It's kind of a mecha series, but it goes beyond that. And there's a line in there when one of the characters, Kurtz Weber, says, "You dog, you!" And Andrew had pulled himself up on the edge of the couch, and he said it so clearly, "You dog, you!" And it was like,
what? What I'm saying is that anime taught Andrew how to speak.
Yes. The crazy thing is, though, is that he could not speak clearly before then or after then for a good long while. That was the only thing that he said ever that was that clear was, "You dog, you." And we're like, all right. Time to start watching what we're gonna be putting on the TV.
the dancing Greeks.
So now,
and so the anime moved from the living room TV to the bedroom TV.
Precisely. Now, as far as my origin with anime, it goes back to long before you guys were even twinkles. Yes. I have been watching anime in some form or another, probably for the last 25 years, actually. I may not have recognized it at the time what anime was. You know, I mean, it was, oh hey, look, this is an animated thing. I'm not going to say it's a cartoon. You know, on TV, and I think it was probably something along the lines of Samurai Pizza Cats or you know, Dragon Ball Z or Dragon Ball, something like that. But it was just like, hey, something on, let's watch it. The first time I actually physically thought about, you know what, I'm watching anime, was when a very good friend of mine was in college, and this was 2000. He was in college, and he was watching bootlegged, pirated Trigun in Japanese, that was fan-subbed. So the subtitles were done by fans. They translated it, and I was like, wow, you know what? I'm watching something that is not American.
I was going to ask you.
And it just never occurred to me.
I was terribly curious about your origin story, because I knew you were a fan from way back.
Oh, yeah.
And way back for you and I is like when media was not as global.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is like to show you how old we are, people, this is pre-internet days.
Yeah.
You know,
this was on.
There's no such thing as streaming.
No.
There is, it's all physical media, and I was wondering where and how you got into it.
So
tell us more.
Another very, very good friend of mine had the entire series of Dragon Ball Z and was getting it as the final episodes were coming out.
Wow.
On VHS.
Wow.
It was enough that he built himself a throne with the VHS tapes. It wasn't a very big one, but you could actually physically sit on the throne of Dragon Ball Z.
That's awesome.
And another very good friend of mine would buy VHS tapes, and then DVDs as DVDs came out. And he would...
Yeah, speaking of building
yes.
storage capabilities for anime DVDs, I'm going to out you right now.
You are?
Uh-huh.
You are.
Let's just... So when I said the anime had to move from the living room to the bedroom, I was speaking quite literally in a certain sense. Tell us about that, Jeremy.
So I will preface this by saying that it is not even... what was the collection at its largest point.
Oh, really? This is small? It's been shrunk?
It's been shrunk by about two-thirds, surprisingly.
Jeez!
But a good portion of that was manga as well. And for those not familiar, manga is the actual... the graphic novelization of these stories. And
the origin story.
Yeah,
the story.
Oftentimes they're what come out first, and they're done in... You know, they're done as serials in magazines and in things like that, compilations. So
it's kind of like the Japanese version of the relationship between comic books and superhero animation.
It's adaptation versus origin, essentially.
So anyhow, in my bedroom there is five shelves, and when I say shelves, that is in the most liberal interpretation of it. They're really about 20 foot long each that are filled with manga and anime DVDs, as well as some knickknacks here and there. And they
are custom built for the perfect size and shape to
house
this collection.
And this was after paring it down. There was vast majority of it's my wife's, bear in mind. She would spend almost entire paychecks.
I was going to say, when the two of you got together, in terms of what do you have in common, so, I imagine this came up pretty quickly.
By the time though that we actually really got, you know, serious, I didn't really have much of a collection of anything at that point. So everything I was watching was on Netflix, and at the time it was just a DVD subscription service. So
Netflix before the internet. Yes.
Netflix before the internet.
It existed.
So
Were you guys aware of that Netflix started as a DVD by mail service?
Yeah.
Well, was Redbox before or after Netflix?
Oh,
or like
well
same
after.
Time.
Well after. Her collection was relatively small then, but it grew exponentially as we could combine our incomes.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We were dinks at that point, and so we spent a lot on anime.
For those who might not be familiar, dink refers to the acronym Double Income No Kid.
there was a few years of our life where that was the case.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for those halcyon days.
I know. All right, move out. Really, for me, it's one of those things that I don't really have a, you know, this is the point at which I started watching anime and why. It was always there.
Yeah.
You know, like, do you remember the first time you watched, you know, Saturday morning cartoons?
No, exactly. Yeah. Good comparison.
And so I have developed my love and taste of all things anime. I was just going to say,
I believe we call that a lifelong love.
Yes, and the reason though I continue it though is because it is not... This is anime. There is so much to it. There is something for literally every kind of taste out there. You know, the only reason why you cannot find an anime that you wouldn't like is because you don't like animated things. And that's really it. It is so
well, that's why it's
megalithic.
That's why it's difficult to define anime, because it's not really a genre, because within anime is many genres are held.
Yes.
Style? Maybe? I don't know, because it's more than a style.
It's just a media type.
Yeah, and, a type. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the history, though,
the fact that we have to go to such a generic word as type indicates how vast and broad
it
is. Even though this episode is titled, you know, has anime in the title, it's not like anime is a franchise.
No.
Anime contains a multitude of franchises within it.
And some of them
are huge. Yeah. That have been going on literally for decades.
One Piece.
longer than One Piece. Actually, the longest running series, television series. I don't remember the name of it, but it is an anime that has started, that started back in the 60s and is still going on. Mm. There's like 25,000 episodes. You know, seriously, it is... Leave it to the Japanese to have something that will run for literally ever. Hello, you know? Kitty.
In other words, it's a...
Learn Hello Kitty.
It's an anime soap opera.
Yeah. Yeah! Again, the only reason why someone wouldn't find an anime that they wouldn't like is because they either don't like anime or don't like animated things, or they just haven't tried and won't try.
Yeah.
That's really it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what happened with my friend. You know, he's a close buddy of mine. He was never a fan of anime. Couldn't get him into it. He was only MCU, DC, that sort of thing, right? So we still had basis, and we were still close friends. But eventually he found Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball got him hooked. And then he introduced me to Dragon Ball, and then now I'm hooked on Dragon Ball. But he hasn't found anything else like Dragon Ball that has hit him like that, right? But he's still a fan of anime and can appreciate it because he did find that. He really enjoyed it.
For this episode, I challenged Jerry to watch those three specific anime, Erased, Demon Slayer, the first season, and Spirited Away. And when we spun our wheel, we came up with, it was Demon Slayer, episode 23, the Hashira meeting. Mm-hmm.
Before we talk about that, though, yes. There's some things I want to talk about in general.
I want to talk about what you thought about, first of all, in general, mm-hmm. with the selection.
Mm-hmm.
Did I hit the mark with those selections?
Yes, I did. I think very well. Okay. I think all very right. very well. That's what I wanted to hear. I think it was a nice variety,
mm-hmm.
Which I really appreciated. It's funny. I have some questions where I want knowledge, and there's some questions where I'm like, am I right about this? It wasn't until, I don't know, it might have even been until, the order I watched things in was I watched Erased,
mm-hmm.
and watched I watched a handful of episodes of Demon Slayer, maybe like three or four, and I was like, oh, I'm not sure. And then I got into Erased, and Jeremy and I watched some of that together, and then I watched the rest of it on my own. Really enjoyed Erased. Really love the storytelling, the style, the story, etc. Really loved Erased. I really loved the sci-fi element to it. Twists, the whole story was great. Mm-hmm. Very much enjoyed it. Then I went back and watched a bunch more Demon Slayer, and just at the very end here, I've watched Spirited Away. So like I said, with the Demon Slayer has what I would describe as what most people not familiar with anime think of as anime, right? Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is, if you had said to me, anime, I think of when somebody gets a strong emotion, their face either goes simpler or different with like the big white eyes, and then like animated little features would pop up around their head, and mm-hmm. they'd go crazy with like, ah, da, 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 you know, all that kind of, Demon Slayer has all of that. The other two, not so much. I mean, there's small, subtle touches of those characteristics of anime in Erased, and not really, I don't remember much of any of that going on in Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm.
You know me, I can't watch things without thinking. I tend to think, some might say overthink. As I'm watching these three anime, I keep pondering how much of this is Japanese culture that is different from American culture that is weird to me, but would be perfectly normal to the Japanese. And has that become normal to, like, my son and my best friend and that kind of thing because they've watched so much of it or not? And one of the first things that made me think about this or that I had questions about was that idea of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that in just about all of them, less so in Spirited Away, but in Erased and especially in Demon Slayer, you get the word that kept coming to mind was abrupt. Like there was an abrupt shift in emotion. Yeah. Like someone would just be like perfectly calm and talking like this, and then all of a sudden it'd be like this! And then And then they'd be perfectly normal again, speaking like this. And I was like, anyway, that left me very confused and very sort of like, I find that part a little off-putting. You know, I will confess, I have very little patience for Zenitsu. Very little. I can't deal with that guy. Can't deal with that guy. The other thing that related to that that I was thinking about was tears. The use of tears in anime, I find very interesting because it took me, at the beginning of my journey with these three anime, I was like, why is everybody crying so heavily at the drop of a hat? And where is all these tears coming from? And why are they so large? And then it wasn't until near the end of my watching all of these things that it sort of finally dawned on me. And correct me if I'm wrong, but here's the conclusion I came to. Tears don't actually represent physical tears, but are rather a visual indicator of someone's sorrow, someone's upsetness, someone's heartbreak, etc., like that. And that's why the tears, you know, you get this massive volume of tears that just come right away and then just sort of vanish and doesn't leave. Because, like, the amount of water coming out of these characters' eyes would leave their clothes drenched. If it was literal, and it sort of finally, and it sort of finally dawned on me. I was like, "Oh, tears is just sort of a visual symbolism for an emotional response to things." And once that sort of clicked, I was like, "I could appreciate the artistry and the place that tears held without being distracted by my literalistic feelings or thoughts about that whole thing." So that was my first sort of response. I did have that question about the abruptness of the shift from being perfectly calm to being freaked out or super angry or super upset and like just and how much of that is Japanese, how much of that is just anime, just for anime's sake, how much of that is and how you guys relate to that whole thing.
Right.
That's not my only question, but that was kind of the first thing that I wanted to discuss.
I can agree with that. However, I would say different emotions play very differently in different anime.
For example,
in Demon Slayer, you might have like Zenitsu tearing up and like screaming Nezuko, right? And like tears pouring everywhere versus in like Erased, it could be wildly different and have wildly different impacts. It
depends on the genre of anime, pretty much.
Precisely. Yeah.
This is my understanding, limited as it is, about Japanese culture. In a lot of ways, and I'm sure that there are people that are going to tell me that, no, you're completely off base about this. But from my understanding, Japanese culture tends to follow the nail that sticks up is the nail that gets pounded down. Okay, people tend to follow the rules very much more so than here. They are not as individualistic. So emotions tend to be less...
Prevalent.
Expressed. There you go. Yeah. They tend to be less expressed. It doesn't mean that they don't have them. But a lot of anime, they have it, as best I can tell, because it's a way of expressing emotions without being looked down upon by society as a whole. And obviously that society or that culture is very much different in the city than it is in the suburbs or in rural Japan.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Then again, there are other anime where there is not the need for that overt display of heavy emotions. Mm-hmm. It does it with storytelling or with putting more detail into the artwork, such as Erased or another one, A Silent Voice. They don't use the little hash marks to display anger or tears of emotion.
So here's a related question. Yes. Does audience impact the use of these what I think of as anime stylizings?
Yes.
You know what I mean? In other words, is Demon Slayer pointed more at children, whereas Erased is pointed more at an older audience?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, that's complicated by the idea of Spirited Away, because Spirited Away doesn't have any of that. It's very subtle story. Mm-hmm. The emotionality in it is fairly subtle. And in many ways, I think Spirited Away demonstrates almost all of the characters demonstrate sort of more of that restrained, propriety being so important.
Yes.
And the fact that I know Sen was her her bathhouse name. You know, the character of Sen, she occasionally will cry because she's a child, and she's always told, stop that, stop that. I suspect that's more Spirited Away demonstrates sort of the an emotional calmness, like an emotional,
like still water.
Like still water, yeah, that's good. Whereas Demon Slayer is the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yes.
Erased is kind of in the middle. Erased has some wonderful moments, especially when they're in the past timeline with as kids, where they, when the kids have big feelings, like somebody has a crush on somebody, or somebody's crush on somebody's revealed, or something like that, where they might have the face, the face change shapes, or the eyes go super wide, or whatever.
I just said that out loud, didn't I?
Oh yeah, that's, I love that. Yeah, I said that out loud again.
It's an idea for a manga I had. The Grim Reaper makes a scheduling error, and a kid dies on the wrong day. He tries to bring the kid back to life, but it backfires. Someone else dies, so he tries again, and someone else suffers. He just wants to do the right thing, but everyone he meets ends up one way or the other, miserable or dead.
So are you saying you're kind of like that Grim Reaper?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
You're an idiot. What? Do I look dead? And as for being miserable or whatever, what does he know? That's his opinion. Your Grim Reaper character should have a little more faith in himself. I think it's too soon to give up on what you want, because nothing's set in stone. However this ends is still up in the air, and no one knows what it's gonna be yet.
Irie, I'm really glad I got to meet you. I said that out loud.
You idiot. Anyway, whereas Demon Slayer is at the other end, and yet at the same time, I'm fascinated by the fact that the anime style of Demon Slayer with the over-the-top Zenitsu, and even
Inosuke.
Inosuke, thank you. Yes. I knew it was an I, started with an I. But Inosuke, with his just over-the-top belligerence at the beginning.
Yes.
Right? Where he's all about the bluster and the belligerence. I do like the fact that Demon Slayer does come back to these characters that start as caricatures and fill them in and provide a backstory that allows for their, you know, kind of like crazy explosive emotions to be understandable. You know what I mean? Like the Zenitsu with the Gramps, who was basically abusive to...
he was training him.
Okay. you know, and I can only assume, and I haven't quite gotten to it, but I can only assume they'll do the same with Inosuke. But I like that, and so I can see where, if that's targeted more at like a kid's audience going extreme, it could be like, you may have these feelings, and they may come from this, but, you know, that, so I could kind of see that. That makes sense to me. But yeah, I had a hard time watching it. those parts, I tend to, if anything, when Zenitsu's freaking out, I'm like, 10 seconds forward, 10 seconds forward, 10 seconds forward. Okay, he's back to normal phase, you know?
And I mean, that kind of thing, it can be fun if that's what you're wanting. But at the same time, the story in Demon Slayer is a very complex story. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the thing that confused me a little bit, because I was like, the anime style is so extreme, it seems like that's pointed at little kids, and yet the story is so very... I mean, the violence, the evil, you know, the creepy scariness of the various styles and types of demons, the blood everywhere, the, as well as just, I was also fascinated and appreciative of the fact that demons get backstories. Although I found it really interesting that in the first arc, all the demon backstories come after they get beheaded. It's like, as soon as they get beheaded, then you get to see their story as they think about their life, and then it's you know, and then it's Tanjiro who like always shows them kindness at the end, and they feel like they might be redeemed. It's always this ambivalent, at least the ones that I saw just in this first arc, it was sort of, there's an ambivalence, there's an uncertainty around, okay, were they actually redeemed, or did they just feel like they could have been, and they had this moment of warm and fuzzies before they go to hell? it's not entirely clear, and I like that. I like that, because it's kind of fun. It's kind of a thought experiment kind of thing. But the sophistication of that, combined with the and from what I gather mm-hmm. earlier, this might be a controversial word, but like the cartoonish aspects
yeah.
of the emotional extremities. Those two things, you and I, Jeremy, talked about a couple of weeks ago on Galaxy, on our episode about Galaxy Quest, how Galaxy Quest does that delicate dance between mm-hmm. broad comedy and then 2 or 3 minutes later, you're about to cry
because right, they have
these dramatic moments where characters die. And if you think too much about how much sentient life dies, it kind of puts a damper on the broad comedy and the laughing.
Yeah.
And how well that movie does in that delicate dance. Demon Slayer, for me, as much as I love all of the complicated, nuanced storytelling going on around the ideas of family, around the ideas of humanity, around the ideas of good and evil and fallen creatures and demons, the cartoony, over-extremed emotions, mm-hmm. it did not feel like there's no delicate dance there. It's just like crash cuts from one to the other. And like when it crashes into the extreme emotions, mm-hmm. it really takes me out of it. I'm really like, oh, we got this again. Okay, fast forward.
Yeah,
bring me back to the story. Mm-hmm. Erased, loved every minute of it. Loved every minute of it. Watched the whole thing. You know, the slight, you know, when the eyes change, when there's love, or there's, did I say that out loud, or the, she's a witch.
I took over your futon and TV. Sorry.
No, it's cool. This sucks. I need to use the bathroom later, I'll have to tiptoe around her.
Hey, if you need to use the bathroom later, don't worry about tiptoeing around me. I'm gonna sleep like a log tonight.
Witch.
You know, right. All of that witch. Really, really worked really well
yes.
on me. I loved the whole thing of it. You know, I was really worried because you told me it was super dark. And I was like, oh, is this gonna be a tragedy where like there's really bad in the end? And it turns out that it wasn't. It was, you know, the subject matter has darkness in it, you know, where it's a real adult material mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. true mm-hmm. child abuse and child murder and those sort of things. But the story itself is really heroic and powerful and good. And the hero has enormous sacrifice that he has to undergo.
Huge personal sacrifice.
But it ends that it's got a happy mm-hmm. ending to it. Mm-hmm. And that's that I really liked it.
Spoiler alert for Erased.
Yeah.
I liked the fact that at the end of the story, the main character did not quote unquote get the girl.
Right.
His sacrifice was far more than what anybody expects. Mm-hmm. And it's not what you expected from what the final episode, next to final episode, would lead you to believe.
It doesn't portray him getting the girl, but it certainly teases it up though,
It teases it up, but at the same time,
because he got the pizza girl.
Yes. And which is, you know, I mean, we'll all worry about how weird that is, that a 17-year-old girl and a 26-year-old man were, you know, friendly like that. But at the same time, kind of a fun little aside in the story where you could see his complex thoughts on it that mm-hmm. so many people would have.
Again, in the spirit of not overthinking something,
yes.
I mean, a 26-year-old in a 13-year-old's body
is
having thoughts
enough,
about another 13-year-old girl,
yes.
It's like,
yeah.
you know, let's not think too hard about any of that.
I will say, I do find it fun that he says that a couple times. He's like, dude, you're 26.
Yes,
get a hold of yourself.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. That's good.
Yeah.
That's one of the best things, how he just, like, hold himself back.
I can tell you, just as far as anime is concerned, Demon Slayer is what's called a shoujo anime. And those tropes that you spoke about with the sudden emotional changes, the tears, the hash marks and everything like that, that's all very common in shoujo anime. In fact, I'm sure you and Lucas could name a dozen or so shoujo anime that do just that.
For sure.
But at the same time, would they necessarily have had the same kind of storytelling
that Demon Slayer had? Yeah, I think that's where like studio and story and all that comes in.
Andrew, would you say as much as I like the show, would you say Fairy Tail had that same level of sophistication that Demon Slayer had? Even though it's a great story, did it have that same level of sophistication?
No, it was pretty much a completely different story and sophistication. one's completely different.
So is shoujo anime just, is it just a style? A particular style, or is it a particular kind?
It's a particular story type. So shoujo is basically, okay, think of it like the typical boy anime. It's the fighting, it's the, to some extent, the fan serve. Dragon Ball Z is a shoujo anime. It's shonen, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Shonen. Shoujo is more of like the girl type thing where, you know, the relationship, the slice of life, the frou-frou love kind of thing. That's shoujo. Shonen is boy, rough and tumble, you know, rough housing kind of thing. The storyline tends to be more involved with action rather than emotion. You know, they focus more on the fighting.
So Demon Slayer is like archetypal shonen.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Or they'll have those emotions, but during the fight scenes, you don't see many of those, like, heavy expressed, like, teary-eyed or anything.
Yes.
You might see them more, like, serious or, like,
right,
focused, like, yeah, that sort of thing, yeah, right? Like, you might have more detail,
okay,
but less of the more, like, comical.
What I was referring to, yeah, as cartoony.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 I think that's easily shown with Zenitsu.
Also, to be fair, Zenitsu is so many people's least liked character.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I will out my dad. He was watching it in dub. I can fully agree.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the dub Zenitsu.
No, the dub Zenitsu, you just like, come on. Mm-hmm. Though they did do a really good job with,
oh yeah, for sure,
the voice actors.
Yeah, VA, props to them.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah. So,
but that the problem is, I think they did maybe just a bit too good of a job.
Okay, so I have one more generic anime before we go to the wheel selection.
Yes.
One more question. What is the deal with the fact that the subject matter of the anime, really dark, really serious, you know, killing demons, consuming humans, time travel to save children from abuse and kidnapping and death, and the theme songs are all bangers, like,
no,
like slapping bangers, like
the opening, like, the opening of both Demon Slayer and Erased are just.
Solid. Is that an anime thing, or was that just for those two?
That's an anime thing.
That is an anime,
okay,
thing.
Yes. All right.
Very much so.
Because I was like, is this a whole industry where there are like rock stars who just do anime theme songs?
They actually, like, yeah. So, that is an actual thing.
All right.
It's very much. I think they do a much better job of anime opening and closings than they did with, like, Full House in there, you know, or those other sitcoms, and they do a much better job making the story pop.
Because an album of those theme songs would
just wait until you get to, like, some of the higher tier movies, like the soundtracks in those. Oh, the first one that comes to my mind, Dragon Ball Broly.
Amazing. Oh. The soundtracks and everything are a huge part of the stories. And now more than it used to be. A lot of the old anime, they would be like, hey, this sounds like a fun song, let's toss it in there, and then it's like completely disparate from what the actual story is.
But see,
like,
there were no subtitles or obviously dubs of the theme songs. Does the theme song to Erased?
Yeah.
this upbeat, super cheerful, sort of wonderful song that I can't, that I don't know, like, are the lyrics like about, like, must save the children from death during this, like what are the lyrics like?
Do we know? We'll put the lyrics up, because I have read the translations and everything.
Like, are they thematically related?
They are thematically related, yes.
Okay, but so, not like explicitly like, no. We're gonna go decapitate some demons! Ah!
No, no.
My sister's now undead! I must protect her!
and that's one of those qualities that anime has developed to a high degree in the last 15 or 20 years. So I would say the quality of them has gone up significantly.
For All right, sure. So here are the for lyrics sure. to the Erased theme song. I waited for you and waited for you and made a mistake I can never undo. And now I look back, but then I lose track. I spent so much time I can never get back. Could wait forever, but then I won't learn that memories fade no matter how much it hurts. And on the inside, I feel my heart cry. I'm tearing at the walls and the corners of my mind. Want to tell you just to hold, but now those days are gone. Hold on, I still regret word that day I never said. I still remember the tangle we were, but in the end, what did we give it up for? It was something so small, worth nothing at all, but it was now my everything, and now I've lost it all. Oh, now I will never get the chance to tell you. Wow, okay.
Yeah, so it is, yeah. It is thematically,
so thematically related. That's cool.
Yeah.
So now that does vary per anime. I have watched some anime where it's like not at all related, but still has like
it still slaps.
Yeah, it still slaps.
So one of the that comes to mind is like SAO's Crossing Field Opening. Part of it doesn't go with it, but part of it does.
Yeah. Yeah, there are anime like that where, like, the intro or outro, some of it can be related, and then some of it's just like, this is just good.
I'm going to throw this out there. Mm-hmm. One Punch Man, season one opening.
Oh.
It's related. It is very much on key with the show, but also it's just, you know, you're like, this is bad. Hey, man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. If I had hair, I would headbang this right now.
Oh, yeah. I remember first time watching that, I was like.
Yeah. But then the anime, you're just
100 push-ups.
Like, he's like.
100 sit-ups. Okay. <It's> just... mm-hmm.
So Hashira meeting, as I recall, it begins where Tanjiro regains consciousness because mm-hmm. he lost consciousness after his battle on Mount, what is it, Nagato? The Spider right, Mountain, yes, basically. Yes. After the battle, he loses consciousness and the Demon Slayer healers bring him to where the Hashira meet the master. He regains consciousness only to look around in confusion, being bound because he has been brought before the Hashira to be tried. Before they are introduced, they all begin to chime in on how they just want to get rid of Tanjiro and Nezuko. My son's handing me cheat sheets now. I'm winging it. I'm doing my thing. Leave me alone.
All right. So, didn't know if you need names or something.
So each, well, I might, but I'm just going to go with the so each of the, most of the Hashira get to express their opinion that they should just get rid of this boy and this demon mm-hmm. because they have broken the core, the rules of the core, and they don't belong.
Mm-hmm.
But right before they execute that judgment, pun intended, the master arrives, and the creepy twins announce that the master has arrived, and the master comes out, puts a hold on everything, and it's after the master arrives that each of the Hashira are introduced by their name and their, what would you call it, avatar? Like which, what flavor of Hashira they are? Like, the insect... There's the insect Hashira and the earth Hashira and the snake Hashira and the mist Hashira, who seems totally high, which is awesome. Then there's the, what else am I missing? Well, the love Hashira, who just is like falling over herself in love with everyone.
She's fun. And she's a lot of fun, honestly.
And then there's Tomioka, who's the water Hashira, which that was very fun. That was a revelation from the last episode.
Poor Tomioka.
And fire. There's a fire Tomioka. There's a fire Hashira,
yes,
as well.
Yes, Rengoku.
Yeah. So they're all introduced individually. The master then says, okay, we need, on my word, you, the Hashira, should accept Tanjiro and Nezuko as a Demon Slayer pair in the core. And both the Snake Hashira and the, and I think the Fire and the Rock Hashira, all, or Earth Hashira, all say, no, Master, we cannot accept that. So then the Master pulls out another card and says, well, I have a letter here from...
Urokodaki.
There you go, Urokodaki.
Yep.
Has a letter stating that both he and Tomioka will vouch for Nezuko, that Nezuko has never feasted on humans and won't ever on their life. So they will commit seppuku and kill themselves ritually if Nezuko ever feeds on a human. And the master's like, so, can I get buy-in now? And still, the holdouts hold out. And so the snake Hashira takes Nezuko, stabs her with his sword through her box while she's still in her box, then cuts his own arm, drips his blood into her box, onto her box. They go, the snake Hashira asks the master's, says, excuse me, master, throws the box into the shade under the pavilion, goes in with her, yanks open the box, has Nezuko stand up. And Nezuko's like looking like she's about to bite him, because he's just taunting her with his blood. And that's when Tanjiro gets up to the edge of the stage and has Nezuko look at her. And Nezuko then has the memories of family and love. And she then turns away from the snake Hashira. And that kind of is enough for the Hashira collectively to let them live and continue on.
No, I find it very interesting that they decide to let them live, but not necessarily accept them as part of the Demon Slayer Corps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, I was very specifically vague about that, because it is pretty clear that they're still not happy about it.
Now those perceptions in some ways do change as you go on with the story, and I'm going to have to try very hard not to spoil things, because there's a lot in the story that just go so much further with it.
And this episode was also a good example of, like I said, it's about the only thing this episode doesn't have is battle against a demon. There's there's some flashbacks and things, but it doesn't really have a demon battle. But it does show...
Well, I'd say not a physical demon.
What do you mean?
Oh, good point. Good point.
There is still battle, just not in a physical way.
You're talking about Nezuko's battle against mental, her lust. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. I get that.
It's a mental and emotional battle.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. There is no swordplay, or no. At least not much, you know.
Yeah, it's not like a battle of good and evil.
Yeah. But it does have that mixture of super serious, dramatic what's going to happen. Combined with the super comedic over the top, like the healer who is like, shut up! You were in the presence of the master! How dare you say anything! Oh my god! You know, that kind of thing. That sort of always makes me roll my eyes, like, okay. And then the episode ends with them being taken to the manor of the insect Hashira, of, the ladies of the butterflies, so to speak.
and like we discussed before we started recording, it really is a quintessential Demon Slayer episode. It really is.
It's a very good, to the heart of the show.
It's a very good representation of what the show genuinely is, without being like, this is the show. Yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It shows a lot of the struggle that's there inherently in the story, and why the story is a difficult one for Tanjiro and Nezuko to forward. To advance.
Why it's an uphill battle.
Yeah, why it's an uphill battle. And not just in their lives, but the story in general, because they are living a story. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not referring to Demon Slayer as a series, the story, but the story of the two of them, the fact that they are both orphans, the fact that they are both outcasts for reasons that they cannot control.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's also said that this has never happened before.
Yeah, the fact that it has never happened in the thousands of years that demons have been plaguing the Earth, it didn't need a battle, a full-blown fight to the death with some powerful enemy to convey that story.
Well, also the other thing I thought about in terms of this whole Pitch It episode too, in terms of anime, is that at least the examples that I consumed really dealt with archetypal stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They were real archetypal stories. You mentioned in the Lost in Space episode about the classic sci-fi trope of who's the monster?
Yes.
Is it the monster? Is it the human? And this episode of Demon Slayer kind of raises that same question in an interesting way of who is the monster?
Yes.
You know, is Nezuko the monster just because she's a demon, but she's making these choices? Or is the snake Hashira the monster because he won't even look at her as an individual, but will only see demons? You know, they're sort of like, oh, these Hashira demonists. You know,
yeah.
Sort of like racist, but demonists. You know, it's like they refuse. And Tanjiro is sort of in the middle of that with his, like, demons are not just pure evil to be destroyed. They were people. They have histories. They have feelings about what they've done and what they've been forced to do. And therefore, they have some dignity and worth. Likewise, for Erased. The story Erased is a story. They call it themselves in terms of the young man's friend who says, you're a superhero. You're a hero. And the cost of heroism, the self-sacrifice inherent in trying to save others. And then Spirited Away is your classic portal coming of age story.
Yeah.
Where you go to another world and you are faced with otherworldly challenges that are well beyond the normal world, but through those challenges you grow up, you find your strength, you find your voice, you find your own, you know, power. Those are archetypal stories that are just presented in this particular style.
The fact that those stories are, not only are they archetypal, but they are familiar archetypal. And they are familiar and comforting in a lot of ways.
Universal.
They're universal.
So that even couched in a Japanese type of media, me who knows next to nothing about Japanese culture or style or anything, can still recognize the stories, connect to the stories, and really enjoy the stories.
That's why I picked those three ones. It sounds like you enjoyed them.
I did.
You did. And I encourage you to continue on with Demon Slayer, even though it does have those the comedic over the top at times. As you move on in the story, is less and less of a issue.
Becomes less and less prevalent,
yes,
so as to throw me out of the story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'll definitely keep watching.
The plot thickens.
It does. The plot thickens, and there's a dozen, two dozen, five dozen different anime that you would, if those two worked for you and the movie, then there are so many others that will do that and more to varying degrees. That's one of the reasons why I think anime is probably one of the best media types to express a story, because there is so many there. There's one for every single taste, you know? I do want to know, genuinely, Lucas, Andrew, what are your favorite anime, if you could pick your top three favorite anime, and why?
Oh,
I know it's
gosh.
A tough ask. It is a hard ask.
Or if you want, maybe providing a concrete metric would make it easier.
Okay.
I can't stand favorites, but I can answer factual questions like, which anime have you rewatched the most?
Which anime have you rewatched the most?
For me? Honestly, really tough. I've seen a lot of different anime. I've seen shorter ones, I've seen longer ones, I've seen way too many. Because I've gone through the whole spectrum of seeing, like, anime that I have to pay full attention into in order to just decipher, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, 3 minutes of the episode. Versus anime that I can just put on and just finish. But I'd say the one that I've definitely rewatched the most is, apologize if I say it wrong, Arifureta, which is, let's see, From Commonplace to World's Strongest. Mm. Essentially, it's a story of betrayal and just badass. That's the easiest way for me to say it.
Betrayal and badassery.
Yeah, because this guy, classic East guy, goes to a different world, right? No,
it sounded like this guy, yeah.
Yeah, and classic East guy, whole class goes to a different world. He has one of the weaker abilities, right? And they're supposed to take down this labyrinth.
Hold on, real quick. Mm-hmm. Spoiler, or not spoiler, FYI, for your information, isekai is a type of anime where a character or group of characters is transported to a different world, usually a fantasy world or based on, mm-hmm, a video game, something of that nature. When someone says isekai, they really mean that the
like
character...
a portal story.
A portal story, yeah. Yes, of sorts. And it could be also where someone from a fantasy or an alternate dimension comes over to this world. Mm-hmm. They're both, mm-hmm, considered isekai. Okay. Back to it.
Also, spoiler alert for the anime. Yeah. I'm do very brief, right? I'm not going to try to spoil anything big.
Well, how about instead of talking about the plot, talk about why have you rewatched it? What do you love about it?
Main character is, as I said, absolute badass. Just flat out. He goes from weakest guy, essentially summoned, mm-hmm, to becoming the strongest, I'm pretty sure, on the planet. It's just like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just really cool story of how he deciphers the betrayal, what he does with that, how he progresses and gets stronger himself, what the reunions are like within the different characters, because there's a lot of characters in it that all have different bits to play.
How big is it?
It's not that big. It's like a 20, 30 episode anime. It's not that big, but it's pretty dense, I'd say. Mm,
gotcha. Okay. How about you, Andrew? What anime have you watched the most?
That's the one I've rewatched the most.
Yeah. If you had to go, I've rewatched a couple of things like twice mostly, but the one I would say I enjoyed the most rewatching would be a YouTube series called Metarunners by Glitch Production, which is also like a very popular one because of everyone knowing The Amazing Digital Circus, which everyone appears to really like. My favorite one would be Metarunners. It's about 3 seasons long. It just is a perfect anime. I just love it very much.
What's it about in general?
Pretty much, alright, this is gonna be a small spoiler for those who have not seen it, but it's basically about this person who was a test subject in an experiment, and they basically are allowed to go into video games and manipulate things. Well, they also have to try and escape from a person who wants to use them for...
Akihiko Kaiba.
No. They basically have to try and make sure that she's not caught, and because they want to do wrong things and to try and improve gaming industry, but they just want to use her for bad, take over the entire gaming community.
I take back my previous statement. I think less of Akihiko Kaiba now from SAO, and more along the lines of somewhat Tron in a way, if that makes sense in a weird, twisted way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that makes sense.
How about you, Jeremy? So, favorite anime, most rewatched? So,
most rewatched. Truthfully, there's a few of them here. One of them is Erased. It is probably one of my favorite stories of all time in anime. Trigun, the original Trigun. Yeah. I've rewatched it probably a dozen times.
Love Trigun.
I love the original Trigun. Johnny Young Bosch.
So good.
There's another one called...
is that Outer Space? Is that...
Yes.
There is,
yes,
an Outer
is.
Space,
yes. It is.
Anime, right? Where it's set on spaceships and stuff.
Oh,
like
no,
that.
That's... Okay. That,
there's a lot of those.
I think you're thinking of Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, well, yeah. I know of the existence of that one, but...
In general, there is a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Trigun is set on another planet, but yeah, it does, mm-hmm, involve space. Cowboy Bebop is another one. Let's see.
Cowboy Bebop is always a bop.
What?
I never heard of that one until they did the live action.
Cowboy Bebop is always a bop.
Oh, yes, yes. By the way, the soundtrack to Cowboy Bebop, top-notch. It is amazing.
Iconic.
And also another one, Future Diary. I've rewatched it probably 3 times, 4 times.
That's one that I need to rewatch.
It's dark in a way that Erased is not. Okay? It is just a mind almost in its entirety.
Like a Black Mirror kind of situation?
Yes, very much a Black Mirror situation. Okay. So, okay. I'd say out of all of those, the top one would have to be Erased. for our fun little segment, it is the return of what we have lovingly dubbed the sack of unpopular nerdy opinions. So something along those lines.
The sack of unpopular opinions.
Ooh.
In this bag I have.
And now we have other people here to share the misery with me. So it doesn't have to just be me.
No, no. I'm going to have you and Lucas do them.
Oh, no.
Andrew wants to do
Andrew,
one.
Andrew,
okay, Andrew. Okay,
I can do,
all right,
I can do one.
Why
do
is
one.
The sack of unpopular opinions such, like, cheery colors? It's, like, green and yellow and, like, all
because it's
looking.
A Crown Royal bag. So,
the Crown
for anyone not familiar with the sack of unpopular opinions, I have in here a dozen or so slips of paper with an unpopular or completely
ridiculous
opinion. The contestants here will have to draw one and then defend that position, however untenable it may be.
See, now, Lucas, so, you and I get to go home and develop our own sack of unpopular opinions so that I can then repay, seek vengeance upon Jeremy and make him defend unpopular opinions. Who's going to go first?
Lucas!
Lucas is going first. Right.
And I want,
I want you
to,
I want you to go one.
Hold on to it before... I'm not going to do it. It's not fair for me to do it.
It is
so.
Within my hands.
Okay.
I grabbed one.
Yep, just one. Okay. And hold on to it.
Oh, all right, I got one.
Okay. And some of these are just...
I'm very nervous. I'm very nervous.
Okay.
I
who
swear,
wants,
I swear, if it says anime...
No, it's not an anime one. No.
Okay.
So, all right. Lucas, you drew first. What is your say?
Galaxy Quest is really Star Trek canon.
Have you seen Galaxy Quest?
I think that's probably a very popular opinion. I don't know if this quite makes the game.
I'll take an easy one.
Yeah, okay.
I, funnily enough, did see Galaxy Quest.
All right.
I watched it with my dad when he was watching it before the episode, because he asked if I'd ever seen it. I said,
but
no.
But you have to justify that position, okay?
Okay.
While he thinks about it, should the rest of us reveal
ours?
Yeah. Okay.
And then we can all think about it. All right, so here's mine. Voldemort's Horcruxes are really just his poor attempt to recreate the One Ring.
Gosh.
Oh, that, you know what? I'm not sure Andrew's ready for
that
one. So here. All right.
We will not reveal it at this time.
No, I'll be fully
right, for it. No, that's one he would not know. But it was designed with Jerry in mind.
Oh.
Okay.
Adam West should have reprised his Volaway bat in any Batman we make.
Adam West. Oh, okay. All right.
Adam West is the original Batman. Pow! Zoom! Zap!
All right, Lucas, you're up.
Alrighty. Galaxy Quest is really Star Trek canon. This is proven, 100% set in stone. And that is proven by many different things. For example, their devices that they use can be said to be like almost prototypes of things used in Star Trek. So I'm thinking of Galaxy Quest more along the lines of before mainstream line Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they have the communicators.
Mm.
You can think of the communicators as like a beginning or near prototypes of either the badge or their actual communicator, because I'm pretty sure they have communicators, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the original 60s series.
Yeah. So you can think of it as something like a prototype of that almost, and where they might have taken things from that and brought them over and improved on them, and then from that, it became an iconic thing. The other thing could be they had...
positions on the ship.
He's getting there, okay. I appreciate it, though. Positions on the ship, for sure. They had the captain, they had the pilot, they had... Well, I don't know if there's someone in Star Trek that goes, computer, but...
communications officer.
That is a thing? That they're the only one that could talk to the computer?
Well, in the original 60s series, you know, for the captain to talk to anybody else or whatever, the communications officer often didn't have much to do. Let's
gotcha,
just put it that way.
Gotcha.
But basically, the communications officer in the original Star Trek was basically like, hey, you've got a call. Okay, put it through. And that was kind of it.
Gotcha. Alrighty, well, I appreciate you agreeing with me on that it is actually canon. Because that's the only reason
so,
you reinforce my point. You know?
Yeah, you just proved your point. Well done.
Yeah.
Good job.
And I'm going to pass the baton to my father.
Oh, I'm going next?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, right. You drew next.
Oh, all right. Well, purist. Voldemort's Horcruxes are really just his poor attempt to recreate the One Ring.
Yeah.
It is. Because when Sauron created the One Ring in Middle-earth, the One Ring ruled them all. The One Ring would corrupt whoever held it, would bend that person to the One Ring's evil will, would also allow, and when Sauron himself, you know, wore the One Ring, he then had total control over all the ring wraiths, as well as all of the forces of evil. So when Voldemort created his Horcruxes, what do the Horcruxes do? They corrupt whoever holds the Horcrux for any amount of time. You know, Ginny, poor Ginny Weasley, holding Tom Riddle's diary, which is one of the first Horcruxes. She gets corrupted to do Voldemort's will during the Chamber of Secrets. And so the corruption element is there. When Voldemort himself holds the Horcruxes, he then is essentially immortal like Sauron. He then controls all the forces of evil, including the wraiths, which in the Harry Potter world they call the Dementors. So clearly it is the same.
Compelling.
That is compelling. Very compelling.
So what you're saying is that Dementors and Ringwraiths are basically two sides of the same coin.
Absolutely, because what happens when you destroy the One Ring? You destroy Sauron. What happens when you destroy all of the Horcruxes?
Oh, there you go.
A seventh-year student can take down Voldemort.
No. Compelling.
I do kind of got to give that to you.
Compelling.
That was pretty damn good.
I rest my case.
Dang. Good job, sir.
All right. Last, but certainly not least, Andrew.
All right. I'm going to try and do this fast, but basically I have very little understanding of this. Alan Wise should have reprised his role in any Batman remake. You see, what I'm about to say here is going to be interesting. As his time as a voice actor, during his time as voice acting, he did amazing voices. He just had the perfect tone for Batman.
Okay.
he was like people's go-to iconic voice almost.
Yep. Iconic voice, everyone loved his voice. In modern Batman movies, be perfect for his tone. Not that they do a dark, awful, I'm so tough and mighty. Old Adam West voice.
I can hear it now. Redubbing Christian Bale with Adam West's voice.
You're saying like in the dark times that Earth is going through right now, there should be some joy?
There should be some joy. nice.
Okay.
Calling upon the nostalgia, like we talked about.
All right. Well, very good, gentlemen. Very good. I have some other ones in there that I hope to bring out in the future.
Some of them I hope not to be here for.
Yeah.
Except so they only get more ridiculous.
They only get more ridiculous, yes.
I see, yes. Yes, that very serious one in which I had to argue that Avatar should have been a Muppet movie. Very, very serious. Very serious arguments.
Oh, I keep hoping that
I did a good job with that, too,
by
the way.
You did a phenomenal job.
You killed that. Shameless plug, go check out a few weeks ago.
That's right.
Shameless plug.
Hello, listener. This is Jerry coming to you with an extra little audio drop-in to our episode. As you might have noticed, we were having so much fun in our episode that we actually forgot a segment. We forgot to spin the wheel to determine what we would be watching next. And so I'm coming to you with a drop-in after the fact to determine what episode of the new Max cartoon series My Adventures with Superman Jerry and I will be discussing, because our next episode will be all about Superman, our origin stories, and discussion of the new animated series My Adventures with Superman. So I will spin the wheel now to determine which episode we will discuss. And the wheel spun episode number 6. So we will be discussing episode number 6 of My Adventures with Superman. Episode number 6, My Adventures with Mad Science. Ooh, that's a very fun one. My Adventures with Mad Science. So, episode number 6 of My Adventures with Superman will be the Wheel of Random Episode selection for our next episode.
I think Andrew should read us
absolutely
out today.
I think so.
You think that's what's up here?
So, dear listeners, if you would like to comment, contribute, or in any way interact with our show, you can send us an email at
feedback@twoguysinafranchise. You spelled it by doing feedback at twoguysinafranchise.com.
Yes!
Andrew! Okay! All right. Let me do this.
And I'm going to hit end on record. Everybody, have a nerdy week!
A little postscript audio drop-in on this episode to apologize for the delay between episodes for both Jeremy and I. At times, life gets in the way. This is our hobby that we do for fun. Both Jeremy and I have been slammed of late, and we hope to get back into regular recording soon. Thanks for listening and staying subscribed.